Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Firstly, good evening, John.
And a very good evening to you, Ben, and hi, everybody.
Hi, everyone, indeed. Our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie, and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. Standard text and WhatsApp rate supply, that's 087-179-1032. And we're also available as a live stream on dublincityfm.ie and also as a podcast. First, as usual, we're going to start with what to see in the night sky this week. John, it's cloudy and rainy here in Dublin, if it was clear, there's a good chance that we would see a nice apparition of. Is it Mercury this evening?
It is Mercury this evening, April the 11th, and if you're lucky enough to be in an aeroplane right now at 20,000 feet
above the clouds.
Yeah, you would possibly get to see, because it's for this evening and this evening only, really. It's 17 degrees up in our skies, and it's -0.1 in the light scale, which is quite bright for Mercury. So that would be something to look forward to. Unfortunately, we probably will not see it. Our International Space Station not back in our skies until May the 12th, until May the 28th. So just put those in your diary. If you're a meteor or a meteor shower watcher fan, there's a word and a half for you. We have the Lyrid meteor shower peaking April the 22nd. Of course, he comes really into our skies from April the 15th until April the 29th. So we possibly will get a good 20 per hour due to the moon being a little bit dimmer than it usually is. It's out of sight for most of it. And they're, of course, as usual, best seen from our hemisphere here, which is the northern hemisphere, where the radiant is high in the sky just at dawn. And it can be seen all the way through it. So we look forward to that one as well. April the 22nd is when it peaks, but it is in our skies until from April the 15th until the 29th. So this particular meteor shower produced by dust particles left behind by comet C1861 G1 Thatcher, which was discovered in 1861, hence the name, and best viewing, of course, round about midnight. As always, as we sort of swing into the shower itself, and they can come from anywhere in the constellation of Lyra, but they, of course, can appear from anywhere tall in the sky, which is a really good one. But 20 is not too bad, and a dark, moonless sky. And just a word on Mercury, Ben, is that it's going to fade rapidly. It's actually -0.4 on Friday. At last, that was April the 7th, dimming a little bit faster now, and is going to +0.6, so there's a two-thirds loss of brightness in 1 week. So, again, you can see it's quite high, probably at its highest tonight, at 17 degrees above the horizon, so it's one to watch. I haven't seen it yet.
Ever?
Never. Maybe I have, and I just haven't been able to pinpoint it, and I'm not sure.
I have seen it with the naked eye. But you have to know it's Mercury, because it doesn't look anyway spectacular, like Venus would, where you couldn't fail to notice.
That's
Venus.
True.
I say it's a pity we're cloudy here this evening, because Mercury is currently at its greatest elongation from the sun, 19.5 degrees. Mm-hmm. But you might catch it over the next couple of days with a bit of luck.
Yeah, Venus, very, very bright at the moment. I saw it a couple of nights ago. Before this cloud decided to come in. And it's the brilliant evening star, as we call it, shining in the west during and just after dusk. And it doesn't set until about 2 hours just after dusk, where is dusk at the moment? Sort of 8:30, 9 o'clock-ish, something like that.
I'll give you the times in a moment.
Yeah, it certainly appears very, very brightly in the skies. And Venus is visiting Pleiades, which is the seven sisters, passing 2 degrees left of this particular cluster. And if you have a pair of binoculars or a telescope, have a look at those, because it suddenly bursts into a cluster of stars as well. Mars getting dimmer and dimmer at the moment, and it's plus 1.1 at the moment, which is quite dim, and disappearing to 1.2 this week, so it's dimming through every day at the moment. And Jupiter is out of sight at the moment, unfortunately, in conjunction with the Sun. Saturn, magnitude plus 1, it's dim, and it is emerging into the early dawn view, very low in the east, southeast, and binoculars do help for this. So look for it far, far, far below a star called Altair. Uranus, 5.8, is lost from the view in twilight, and Neptune is 8.0, which is virtually impossible to see as it's hidden in the sunrise as well. So that's a quick run around our planets in our skies. So the one to watch, really, Venus.
Thank you, John. I was looking at space weather earlier, but if you look up spaceweather.com, actually, and there are, just talking about the sun, there are 5 regions of sunspots at the moment. Mm. There is a chance, there is a chance of some aurora over the next couple of days, but I think you can get somewhere where you can get an aurora alert to your phone. I'm not sure whether you can have a look at spaceweather.com. Mm. but there are 5 groups of sunspots at the moment, and that activity, solar activity, should pick up as we head towards solar maximum, which is due around in the year 2025. It's an 11-year cycle of sunspots. Mm-hmm. As we go from min to max, we're heading towards max at the moment. So over the next year or two, we have, generally speaking, a greater chance of some aurora. And hopefully they'll be big enough and bright enough and brash enough that we can see here at this latitude, 53 degrees north of the equator. Now, just a pointer for Saturn, on if you're out and about on Sunday morning before dawn, Saturn is about 4.5 degrees to the upper left of the moon. And next week, the International Dark Sky Week begins. And also next week, on next Monday in particular, Venus will be at perihelion. Well, it will be a mere 0.718. astronomical units from the sun. One astronomical unit being the mean, the average distance between the Earth and the sun. Now, the moon we mentioned, at the moment we have a 67% waxing gibbous moon, but it's not currently up from our vantage point here, but it will rise in the middle of the night, or if you call it 3:30 in the morning, at the middle of the night, or the early morning. It will have reduced somewhat. It's a waning gibbous moon, I should say, because it will decrease to about 64% when we can see it, when it rises tomorrow at 3:30, and it'll be due south about 6:30, and it will set tomorrow morning at 9:40 p.m. when it will have shrunk just another little bit to about 61% gibbous moon as we head towards the third quarter moon, which will be on Thursday. Excuse me. Now, the sun rises tomorrow in Dublin, 6:33 a.m., which is 16 minutes earlier than a week ago, and also a little bit earlier than my alarm clock goes off. Well, for various reasons, my alarm clock goes off earlier on Wednesday and Thursday morning than the other days of the week. It's because I go into the office on Thursday.
I just thought it had a mind of its own.
No. I have it. We can discuss my alarm clock times later, perhaps. But on the other days of the week, work from home. I have a 5-second commute to the office at home. Yes, so the sun will rise tomorrow, 6:33 a.m. local noon is at 1:25 p.m., which is when the sun crosses the meridian, or at its highest point. And then the sun will set at 8:19 tomorrow evening, which is 13 minutes later than a week ago. And then we'll have civil twilight until just before 9 p.m. And then we'll have nautical twilight until about 20 minutes to 10, followed by astronomical twilight until 10:34 p.m. when Nighttime officially begins, and those times are stretching out now, and there's getting to be a slightly bigger time difference between those twilights and astronomical twilight, because as we go towards the middle of June, astronomical twilight lasts for a couple of hours. We don't have astronomical night. But we'll talk about that in the next couple of weeks or so. Anyway, all that means is that we'll have 20 minutes more daylight tomorrow than we had a week ago, when we'll have another 4 minutes and 8 seconds more than we had today. So when there'll be just over 13 hours and 46 minutes between sunrise and sunset.
Have you heard of Steve?
I've
come across Stevie this a number of times, actually, at this stage. I'm not sure if I've seen it yet. It's more towards the northern latitudes. Steve's full name, just to let you know, is a strong thermal emission velocity enhancement. And this is observable here on Earth, even with the naked eye. And it's an optical phenomenon like the aurora. It's not actually the aurora, but this thin arching smear of lavender light, which is slightly different than the northern lights, which are more greeny type of color as well. And it goes through, believe it or not, the Milky Way on the east-west axis and shows up, I stand corrected in this, it shows up as low and closer to the equator than the usual northern or southern lights. So typically the aurora borealis will really just come down to us, maybe a tiny bit further if you've got a very, very strong burst sun flare as well. But so you do get to see a thing called Steve. Now, remember this name is going to appear more and more. So Steve differs from the aurora in ways that are observable from Earth, and also in ways that take specialized equipment to measure. So the particular picture I'm looking at is from a place in Childs Lake in Manitoba in Canada. And it does look like an aurora, but it sort of flies up and around and straight through the Milky Way as well if you're in a dark sky. So the aurora, of course, is beautiful. It doesn't matter where or what they are. And it just reminds us that we have a magnetic field, and it protects us from the sort of the waves of sun flares and things that come out from the sun as well. So,
various types of radiation.
Yep, and it's a visible reminder of this as well, because its color and location tell us its glow is not cast by electrons and protons of solar radiation, but Steve is actually caused by hot ionized gas, usually put off by particularly volatile storms. So I'd love to see one of these. I don't think we're quite high enough and dark enough to see it, but seemingly they are different than the aurora borealis and the southern lights, which are the aurora australis, which are more red in colour. So we have the green ones, which are the aurora up north, and the redder ones, and this one here, if you see it, purpley tinges. They're more than likely ionized gas from storms. So just caught that earlier on today.
Thank you, John. You're listening to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and me, Ben Emmett. Our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie, and the text number is, and the WhatsApp number too, is 087-179-1032. And we're going to talk now about a juicy mission coming up this week. A juicy rocket launch.
Yeah.
JUICE is an acronym for Jupiter Icy Moons Explorer, and it's due to launch on Thursday at 1:15 Irish time, and you will be able to see it, a live broadcast, from about 12:45 on NASA TV, and I think ESA or ESA, well, it's an ESA mission, so you should be able to see it on the ESA website. So, have you heard about this mission? I've been reading about it now for quite some time, but we haven't covered it here on this program.
We haven't had too much information on it. It's one of these things that's going to be very interesting. It's going to take about 5 billion kilometres in its journey to get there and encounter extreme temperatures, intense radiation, and decreasing solar energy during this 5 billion kilometers trip. So we will be keeping an eye on this, and it's operating, and will be operating in the outer reaches of the solar system, and it's the thing that powers it. Is, I know I've never heard this being called tennis courts or football fields, but this is the size of a badminton court, 85 meters squared, to generate its energy. So that'll be an interesting
topic. Not quite the size
topic.
Of a tennis court.
No, not quite. So
that's the solar panels, I take it.
Yeah. Yeah, and it doesn't take that much. There's not too much, but there certainly blows hot and cold as it's making its way there as well.
Yeah, so. But I suppose it's so far out from the sun that you're going to need bigger panels to catch the all photons. It's going to, as you mentioned there, take a long time to get there. It won't reach Jupiter until 2031, and it's not taking the quickest or the shortest route.
We had a little discussion about this. As Jupiter is over there, just pick a point, but it's going around, where is it going around, Venus or something?
There's going to be a Venus flyby in August of 2025. Actually, before that, there's going to be a flyby of Earth next year. Earth and the Moon, and then Venus in August 25, and then it'll head back to Earth for a flyby in the year 2026, and another one in the year January 2029. So the idea was it basically gets steals some of the energy of the planet, and it's like a slingshot.
Yeah.
And although it's being launched this week and won't get there until July 2031... which, of course, is 8 years, but it'll be flying by Earth in 6 years' time. So after it flies by Earth, it'll take a mere, its last flyby of Earth, the third and final flyby of Earth, will be, it'll be only 3 years from that point.
Yeah, it's remarkable to think they just cannot go straight out.
Well, if you had a big enough, powerful enough rocket, expensive enough rocket. Now, this is the more fuel-efficient way of doing it. But unfortunately, it's going to take time. Now, it's going to, as you say, go out to Jupiter. It's going to look at three of the moons of Jupiter that we believe have subsurface oceans of water and therefore potentially habitable. Habitable?
Yep.
Habitable.
Habitable.
Nearly got it.
Yeah.
Habitable is the word. Of the four large Galilean moons, it'll have a look at all of them except Io. But it will then. The plan is it'll go into orbit around Ganymede, and that means, and that's in the year 2034. So that's 11 years away, when it will become the first human spacecraft to enter orbit around another planet's moon. When it goes into orbit around Jupiter's biggest moon, Ganymede. So all those other probes we've had out looking at Ganymede and Pluto and Titan, and was it, which one went down to Titan? As something flew past, didn't it drop a probe?
I did remember that one. Yeah.
But the point being, all the probes so far have flown past natural satellites or moons of these planets, but none are even landed on them. In the case of the one that passed Titan,
which is the problem they're saying
Saturn's big moon. But this was actually going to go into orbit around another planet's moon. That'll be a first.
Yeah, they're saying that Titan is probably the closest to Earth back so many million years ago, probably. Possible that some microbes or algae or something might have formed or something on that. We just don't know yet till we get there. And of course, one of Jupiter's mysteries is the huge magnetic field that it has. And of course, the magnetosphere rotates within the planet and captures swarms of charged particles. And the Juno mission is 40-something elliptical orbits, and it's going to hit about 70 before it dives into the surface. So that'll probably happen before this gets to Jupiter as well. So It's hoped that by investigating the moon's electrical and magnetic environment, the JUICE mission can increase our knowledge of how this harsh environment, 750 million kilometres from the sun, is shaped. So not a place that we would need to be anyway close to.
In Ganymede, apparently it's the only moon known to have a magnetic field. And when it gets there, there's going to be 35 flybys of Europa, Ganymede and Callisto between July 2031 and November 2034. Most of those, 21 of them actually, will be flybys of Callisto, which is, it's been determined to be the most heavily cratered world in the solar system. And some of the radar on it will be, on the probe will be able to penetrate within over more than 5 kilometres below the surface, which is
phenomenal.
Some going.
It is some going, definitely. Now, we did touch on Artemis, whatever you want to.
Last week,
whatever,
yes, we did.
However you pronounce it.
I
like the sound of Artemis. It just has a ring, but I think they actually call it Artemis. And this is Artemis 2, which is the one that will bring humans back to the moon and just go around a few times. And, of course, it's powered by the European Space Module and is on an exploratory vehicle designed for the longer duration of flights beyond the moon. So that's going to be really exciting for going back to the moon. And we can name the astronauts that will be going to the moon on that. Yeah. And
four of them, unlike the Apollo missions, of course, which had fit three people, but there's going to be four people. And
well, seasoned.
There's going to be a 10-day journey, cooped up in a little capsule. Well,
it's a little bit bigger than the original one from the Apollo mission, and that's when they were really cooped up as well. I don't know how they did that. That was
at least when they got to the moon, they go out for a walk.
Yeah, yeah. So we've heard a few stories about that as well. Yeah, getting off the ladder as well. So, who have we got? Reed, is it Wiseman? We have Victor Glover, we have Christina Koch and Jeremy Hansen. Three of those are on their second, or will be on their second, space flight. Now, Christina has been in the space station for, and she's the longest lady, if you like, or woman astronaut to be in space on the International Space Station. So she's well seasoned. So the three of them there. I think Jeremy's his first one. He's the pilot of the unit as well.
He's the Canadian guy. I think Victor Glover is the pilot.
Yeah.
And I think it's his first. Not sure about that, but he's the pilot.
So launch date, November 2024 at the moment.
And see that slipping?
I think probably yes. Now, the difference between the one that they had is they're going to have to fill this one and put oxygen tanks on it, because the Artemis 1 didn't have anything like that because it didn't need it. And it's going to be really exciting when this takes off.
I'm really looking forward to this as well. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
So, when you consider the time differences between, when was Artemis 1? A few months ago. And we're talking about this one end of next year. If you compare that back to the Apollo, now I know it was a different, they had different urgency, I suppose, with the Apollo, because it was a space race and Americans wanted to get to the moon, of course, before the Soviet Union. It was all very political. But, there was a few, maybe what was the time difference between each mission, between Apollo 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12.
It was quick.
It was about, was it 6, 8 months? That's or all. 10 months or something like that. Whereas here we're talking about a couple of years. But I think safety is the highest priority. And I think looking back at the Apollo missions, I think, whoa, took a good few risks there.
They were lucky they didn't lose a crew. Yep. Well, they nearly did in Apollo 13. Which is probably their wake-up call, but they got number 11 onto the moon. Some skeptics say they never got there, but we know they did.
Not go there.
Yeah. Alan has been on. He is soaked in Kildare again. Thanks for that, Alan. And he says, clear skies may blow in tonight for some viewing of Mercury. or anything else he wants to do. But I, funny enough, I did see some blue sky on the way in this evening. Not much, but I did see a little bit. But we're certainly in for a bit of bad weather over the next day or so. So thanks for that, Alan. You're the same as we are up here, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, we are next door to you for sure. Now, we have a moment or two. We have time enough to do perhaps one more item. Oh, tell us, cheer us up about the end of the universe and we're all going to die and everything, the whole universe will die.
Well, we know that a universe that took approximately 3 minutes to form the whole universe in the Big Bang Theory. Is it going to end? Yes, it is. But when will it end? What will happen? Will we get advance warnings? The answer to that is no, it's just too far away. All these questions will be answered, I'm no doubt, in the years to come. But we're talking, right, 3 minutes to start from the Big Bang for all the blubber and stuff from the universe as well. But it's going to take, what did I say earlier, how many?
Trillion
years to end the universe. So we're not going to
have... Everything's at the one temperature and nothing can...
Yeah.
Unless we can find a way to reverse entropy.
Not a chance.
Not a chance.
And as we know, it's expanding at such a rate at the moment that at once time, if we were around for this, light just wouldn't reach us from any of the galaxies as well. But eventually all the stars will run out of fuel and burn out. We'll be left with pulsars, the little white flashing beacons in the skies as the last bit of the energy is done. But eventually...
But even they're going to die out of... lose all their energy.
Yeah.
And the universe will just be one homogeneous mass of
black something or other.
And everything will be at the same temperature, so no work can be done. Nothing can happen.
No, it'll just all burn out and it'll go dim and just disappear, but we're not going to have to worry about that for...
Think of that cheerful story, John.
We're not going to be around to see it, which is great.
No, even planet Earth won't even be around.
We give it, what?
5 billion? Less, I think, the way things are going.
once our sun goes out...
A few months.
It'll expand about 200 times the size of itself and take in... the Earth out as far as Mars, I would imagine, even maybe as far as Jupiter. It will just implode on itself and there'll be a big bang and it'll be gone. But you won't hear anything because you can't hear anything in space whatsoever. So anyway, we're going to have the end of all the stars and anything that goes with it, and we have to wait a couple of trillion years for that to happen. So nothing to worry about now at this particular stage.
Thank you for that cheerful note. We'll try and end on a more cheerful note next week. Thank you very much, John, for your news items and indeed for driving the sound desk this evening. And don't forget our email address. You can contact us anytime. Any questions, comments you may have, we'd love to hear from you. The email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. And thanks too to the people who put the show up as a podcast, and to James Sweeney and Conor Lennon for putting it up on astronomy.ie as well. But that's all from me, Ben Emmett, from this edition of The Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Up next is Hello China, 9 o'clock. Bren Lynott with Threads, 11 p.m. It's Nigel Wood with Ear to the Globe. And from midnight till 2 a.m., we have Dave Barry's mix of jazz, blues and soul in a program called After Hours. But please join myself and John at the same time next week. We'll be back with all the latest news from around the universe. Until then, take care of each other. Thank you for listening and say goodnight, John.
And just before I say goodnight, John, just reminded, it's the happy day before the anniversary of the crewed spacecraft, the 12th of April, which was Yuri Gagarin.
Ah.
Yeah. And then the space shuttle Columbia debut 20 years later, 1981. And we're also reminded, and text number 2, Apollo 8, December 68, Apollo 9, March 69, Apollo 10, May 69, and Apollo 11 in July 69. So there's a quick answer to some of your questions. So some of them were only months apart on the rocket launches, so they were well equipped and able for that as well. Anyway, from me to you, and Ben as well, say goodnight, John.
Goodnight, John. And all that is now, and all that is gone, and all that's to come, and everything under the sun is in view, and the sun is eclipsed by the moon. Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.